From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Veterans Day edition of Washington Watch, Turkey's forces and their proxies continue to attack religious minorities, including Christians in northeast Syria. Amid the reports of war crimes and human rights abuses, the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Jim Reich from Idaho announced last week the committee would not take up the Turkish sanctions bill this week during the visit of Turkish President Erdogan. How will President Trump most likely deal with the growing crisis in Syria and Turkey? Former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, a member of the House Select Committee on Intelligence, and former Ambassador to the United Nations Human Rights Commission, Ken Blackwell, joins me for this conversation. And I think it's appropriate on this Veterans Day that we talk about elections, our freedom to vote. Are you using it, and are you using it wisely? Vice President of FRC Action, Brent Kylan, joins us for a quick rundown on last week's election results and the upcoming election in Louisiana coming up this next Saturday. And General Jerry Boykin joins me in studio as well for a special Veterans Day tribute. All of that and more on this edition of Washington Watch. If you happen to miss anything on your way home or you want to catch it later, go to TonyPerkins.com. It's all archived right there. And there are lots of resources for you there at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, more reports over the weekend that the hostilities continue from Turkey with airstrikes, drone strikes, and on the ground their proxies continuing to hit villages of religious minorities. Dave Eubanks, who is with Free Burma Rangers, has been putting out reports saying that there are recorded incidents of human rights abuses, war crimes, and is calling on the United States to enforce a no-fly zone over northeast Syria to prevent Turkish Air Force from bombing. Of course, last week we reported that at Mount Sinjar, Turkish jets were firing on camps where Yazidis had previously been. They say they are tracking down terrorists, but the conflict continues. What's going to be interesting this week is that President Erdogan of Turkey will be visiting the United States and visiting the president at the White House on Wednesday. What should the president be pushing for? Well, joining us to talk about that, former Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, who was a member of the House Select Committee on Intelligence, and former ambassador to the United Nations for the Human Rights Commission, Ken Blackwell. Michelle, Ken, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Good to be with you.
Well, Ken, let me start with you first. When we are seeing reports from reputable sources, Jerusalem Post has been reporting this. Our good friend Chris Mitchell with CBN has been on the program many times, reporting that there is now documented cases of war crimes, human rights abuses that are being perpetrated by these proxies of Turkey. I mean, this is quite significant.
It really is. Turkey's President Erdogan has threatened to cleanse northern Syria of Kurds. And though the term ethnic cleansing originated during the Bosnian War in the 1990s, genocide and ethnic cleansing are functionally the same thing. Genocide was the legal basis of the Nuremberg trials, which persecuted Nazis as criminals. The Convention on Prevention and Punishment of Genocide was adopted in 1948,
right,
the year that
right.
I was born.
Well, that was also the same year, all this coming out of World War II, you had the Universal Declaration of Human
right.
Rights, Article 18 being the religious freedom article, which is why we're so focused on northeast Syria, is because you had this government come together, religious freedom in that region, and that appears to be what Turkey is moving to wipe out.
Oh, absolutely. The Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of Crimes of Genocide outlines acts that constitute genocide if they are done with the intent of destroying ethnic, national, racial, or religious groups, and they include killing members of the group, causing serious bodily or mental harm, deliberately inflicting conditions of life calculated to bring about the group's physical destruction in whole or part. And that's exactly what the Turkish government has committed to doing.
Well, before I bring Michelle in, I want to play devil's advocate here for a moment, because I think their response is going to be, we're not killing them all. Because what's happening, many of them are leaving. They're fleeing. So we have now about 200,000 internally displaced persons, refugees within their own country. So I think they're going to say, oh, we're not pursuing genocide, when in fact that is what they're doing. Even though they're having to flee to spare their lives, the whole purpose is to uproot. In many cases, we're talking about Syriac Christians going back to the earliest Christians. These have been continuous Christian communities all the way back to the disciples taking the gospel there, and they are being driven out. Turkey is on the move. And Michelle, I want to bring you in on that point, because we've known for a long time that Turkey had plans. Erdogan had plans, and those plans extended beyond their own border.
That's true. Erdogan he's continuing to want to go back to pre-World War I with the Ottoman Empire. He wants to reconstitute the Ottoman Empire, and he fancies himself as the caliph of that Ottoman Empire. He wants an expanded Arab presence in the Middle East region, and that's what he's seeking to do. He's not a man of peace by any stretch of the imagination. In some ways, I think it'd be quite right to say that he's a madman in so many of his rantings and desires. He has not been a man of peace in any way. He's persecuted his own journalists, thrown journalists in jail in his own country. And so he's effectively a dictator. So it'll be very interesting to see him coming right now into the White House. And it'll be very interesting to see what the president's response will be. Again, Erdogan's actions have been laid bare for the world to see, and they're not pretty. As Ken had said, he's effectively trying to bring about through his actions a genocide in that northeast area of Syria. He's certainly not bringing peace to the area. He's bringing war to the area, and it'll be interesting to see what the president will say to him.
You're listening to Washington Watch, a special Veterans Day edition of Washington Watch. Joining me in studio, Ken Blackwell, former ambassador to the United Nations for Human Rights, the Human Rights Commission, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, who was a member of the House Select Committee on Intelligence, now actually the chairman of FRC, and joining me in studio for this conversation today. Ken, the Committee on Foreign Affairs in the Senate, Jim Reich, pulled back having a hearing on a sanctions bill that Lindsey Graham had pushed forward because he didn't want to do it simultaneously with Erdogan being here, said to be bad form. I mean, I think we've got to send a very clear message, and I don't think this is any time to be ambivalent about where we stand when it comes to human rights.
Now, I agree, Tony, and I think it's important that we understand that the president is in delicate and complicated negotiations, and he wants maximum flexibility. But you're absolutely right. When it rises to the level of genocide, this is no time to take a back seat or to shut down in terms of not speaking up. Right. And I think if we, who are human rights activists, don't say what we need to say, shame on us. And I think the president will hear us, and he will use our voices, I think, to do the right thing.
And the president has been a friend of those who are suffering in terms of religious persecution. He also has been very willing to use economic sanctions. That's one of his favorite tools, to use economic sanctions.
He's used them on Turkey, and he's made that reference many times to Andrew Brunson. Mm-hmm. When I brought Andrew back just a little over a year ago, it was the economic sanctions. It was the tariff on steel, in part, that brought them to their knees, almost crashed their economy. Their currency took a hit. And so he has made reference to that many times when he's talked about the economic sanctions he would
use.
And
he'll follow through with that. He's proven that in the past. The president will follow through with economic sanctions. My guess is, if I had to guess, I think that if I was Erdogan, I wouldn't want to be in the Oval Office this week, because I think he's going to hear some really harsh things from the president. The president is not reticent about what he thinks, and he will be very bold, I think, and very straightforward with Erdogan. And I'm really glad, actually, that he's coming this week, because the president is very astute, and he knows what's going on, and he's very street smart, and he doesn't take garbage from anybody. And I think that he's going to lay it on the line with Erdogan when he's here. But I think it's also important for Christians to continually speak into the White House how important it is that we stand for those who are persecuted in northeastern Syria, because Christians and religious minorities are being persecuted by President Erdogan of Turkey.
Right.
And that's the time for the President of the United States to take our voice to President Erdogan and let him know this is not acceptable, and we'll use whatever we have here in the United States to stand for persecuted believers.
Tony, the president is very much aware that the U.S. has historically tried to be a force for good in the world. We opposed Hitler's genocide. Mm-hmm. We bombed the Serbs to prevent ethnic cleansing in Bosnia and Kosovo, launched the Gulf War to keep Saddam from using chemical weapons, and we'll be on the side of right in this situation.
Well, but there have been times when we missed it. And under the previous administration, we were just talking about Mount Sinjar and the Yazidis.
Oh, there's nothing more horrific than that.
I mean, that was genocide.
Horrific. That was genocide.
We actually had the European nations and the United Nations willing and beating the United States to the place of calling that genocide.
Yeah,
in fact,
right.
We went, the Obama administration basically went dragging their feet to get them to that point.
And that is to their shame. That's to their shame, but it's also to the shame of the United States.
In those folks, those refugees, many of them are still living on that. Those Yazidis are living on Mount Sinjar. And so it's sometimes, you can't always project it, but we've seen the evil in the world. We've seen, and I want, when we come back from a break, I want to ask you about a little bit more about Turkey and what concerns we might have based upon some of the intelligence we have. But we've missed it, and it's deadly when we miss it, and we can't afford to do that. All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back here on this special Veterans Day edition of Washington Watch with Michelle Bachmann, former congresswoman from Minnesota, and was a member of the House Select Committee on Intelligence, and our own Ken Blackwell, who is a former ambassador to the United Nations Human Rights Commission. And then later on, Brent Kylan is going to be joining us to talk about elections. And we're also going to be joined by General Jerry Boykin here in studio to talk about Veterans Day, a tribute to veterans, and really some of the changes that are taking place in our nation's military under this administration. All of that and more coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. Don't go away. A lot more to come in just a moment.
Abortion is one of the most combative and sensitive moral and political questions in America today, even among Christians. There has been a renewed effort in theological liberal Christian circles to argue that the Bible does not oppose abortion. In light of these arguments, it is crucial for Christians to know what the Bible actually says about abortion. Does the Bible teach that life begins at conception or birth? Is abortion murder? In FRC's new publication titled Biblical Principles for Pro-Life Engagement, Personhood, Scripture, and Church History, author David Clausen addresses these questions with relevant passages in the Bible that inform how a Christian should think about abortion, the question of personhood, and a survey of how prominent church leaders have interpreted these passages throughout history. Learn more by visiting frc.org/unborn. That's frc.org/unborn.
Meadow Pollock was a high school senior who was tragically gunned down during the Parkland school shooting in Florida. In an emotional and gripping FRC Speaker Series event, her father, Andrew Pollock, and education expert Max Eden discussed the tragic massacre and the politically correct policies that allowed the Parkland shooting to happen. The Southern Poverty Law Center and the Obama administration promoted a false narrative that teachers and principals were racist and couldn't be trusted to enforce rules with consequences. Instead, they argued for healing circles and restorative justice. These policies enabled a psychopathic criminal to maintain a clean background and purchase a firearm used to murder 17 people at the high school. The Obama administration forced these leniency policies into hundreds of schools, serving millions of students across America. To listen to this event and to learn more, visit frc.org/speakers. That's frc.org/speakers.
Religious liberty is one of the most important yet misunderstood issues in America. There's a growing perception that protecting religious liberty is an attempt to lawfully allow bigotry and prejudice. Therefore, Christians need to be able to articulate with greater clarity and persuasiveness why they support religious liberty. Biblical Principles for Religious Liberty, Evidence from Scripture and Church History, is a new publication from Family Research Council that presents biblical and theological arguments for why religious liberty is worth defending and encourages Christians to engage in the fight to preserve America's first freedom. This publication presents key biblical texts that support a broad understanding of religious freedom and key theological arguments based on those texts. In an increasingly secular world, Christians must understand and advocate for religious liberty. Learn more by visiting frc.org/belief.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Veterans Day. Still to come, our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin is going to be joining me in studio for a Veterans Day tribute. And Brett Kylan is going to be joining us with an elections update. But I'm going to continue my conversation with former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann and former Ambassador to the United Nations Human Rights Commission Ken Blackwell as we're talking about this week's meeting that's going to be taking place actually Wednesday with President Erdogan and President Trump. Now, this comes with the backdrop of continued hostilities in northeast Syria where Turkish Air Force drones are continuing to do airstrikes, and on the ground, Turkey's proxies, who some of these militias, are continuing to engage in hostilities with communities there on the border. Michelle, I want to come back to you on Turkey. You know, as if obviously we can't get into certain things, but as a former member of the House Intel Committee. You know, Turkey is a NATO ally, which kind of complicates the situation.
It's very complicated.
They're a member of NATO, but they certainly don't act like an ally.
No, it was really, I think, a poor decision to have Turkey come into the NATO alliance in the first place. It was problematic. They were really kind of a borderline country. The only Islamic country.
Of course, they were secular. They've moved more.
Yes.
To an Islamic.
They're not
country.
Exactly Ataturk anymore. You know, they were, and he that was his goal. Turkey is considered the east-west country, that sometimes it faces east, sometimes it faces west.
Right.
And under Ataturk, it was more of a western-facing country. It is not now, by
right.
any stretch of the imagination. That's one thing that I think that listeners for Washington Watch need to understand about Erdogan and Turkey. He is very much a religiously minded man, religiously minded from the sake of the Quran. And so the Quran is what leads him. And he's from a fairly radical strain of Islam. That is his watchword. That's how his decisions are made. And that's why it's very important to understand this is a religious war that he is fighting. And he is fighting against those who he sees as religious enemies of Islam.
Now, that is something that under previous administrations, our State Department would roll their eyes and say, oh, we can't look at it that way. I actually did an interview this last week with a reporter about Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, the fact that he openly says he's a Christian. And Ken, my argument was he's better positioned to deal with people like President Erdogan and others because 82% of the world actually operates from a religious worldview. Now, I didn't say Christian worldview, but a religious worldview. And historically, our State Department has operated from this Western secular mindset and been dismissive of actions like those of Erdogan.
Absolutely. And I think both you and Michelle have underscored something. This is not the Turkey of 10 years ago or 20 years ago. This is a new aggressive Islamist administration that's in control in Turkey. And we can't say it emphatically enough, they are practicing genocide. And we cannot sit on the sidelines on this. And we have to have our megaphones and give the president that backdrop
right.
that he needs to be the tough negotiator that we know he is.
That's right. And it's important to say that Erdogan does not have clean hands.
That's right.
So a guy that's coming into the office, Oval Office, does not have clean hands. And the president of the United States, I think, has very good moral clarity on evil and good. I think he understands that. And Erdogan has been the perpetrator of great evil, in particular, recently. And I'm really happy that you brought up these documented cases right now in real time of atrocities that are being perpetrated against those who don't agree religiously with Erdogan. And that's where the president of the United States can have moral clarity from this nation. And again, why I would call on the believers who are listening to Washington Watch, keep in prayer this week, this Wednesday meeting at the White House
yes.
between President
yeah.
Trump and President Erdogan. This is a historic moment, a moment when we as believers, we actually can play a very direct role through our prayers, where we ask the President of the United States in our prayers to have wisdom, to ask God to give him, grant him wisdom and understanding to know how to deal with President Erdogan, who is actively seeking death for those who don't agree with him. And I think that we can let our voices be heard, but we can also be on our knees for this important meeting.
That's extremely important. In fact, it just prompted me to think of the prayer that Andrew Brunson prayed over the president
yes.
at the Values Voter Summit
yes.
Just a few weeks
and
ago.
And we were there. We were there yeah, with right. him. We were present watching this, and it was phenomenal. It was the greatest moment of the night to see Pastor Brunson pray over the president of the United States. He prayed specifically for a Holy Spirit anointing upon our president. It was profound.
And for those that would be trying to deceive, to be exposed.
That's
and
right.
I think very significant, given the connection with
yes.
Pastor Brunson and Turkey and Erdogan and the president meeting with him. So we do need
That's
to be
right.
In prayer for the president this Wednesday when he meets with President Erdogan and continue, Ken, to pray for those Christians and other religious minorities
okay.
in Northeast Syria.
I agree, and we must keep a very vigilant eye on the fact that Turkey is playing footsies with Russia and,
yes.
and Iran,
yeah.
And that should raise alarm for among all members of NATO.
It's a tough neighborhood anyway
yeah.
over there. It's a really tough neighborhood, and it's complicated, the relationship that Turkey has had even with the Islamic State.
Yeah, and I certainly appreciate and understand the president fulfilling his campaign promises to get us out of wars and not be the world's policeman. I completely get that. As a veteran, I understand that. But there are times when only America can fill a void. And this in particular in Northeast Syria is one area where we've seen religious freedom and self-government begin to take root.
Mm-hmm.
And it did it on its own. It wasn't anything we did. It was in the wake of ISIS, where you had Yazidis, you had Christians, you had Muslims, you had Kurds working together for self-preservation. Michelle Bachman, Ken Blackwell, thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Thank you.
All right. Folks, don't go away. When we come back, Brent Kylan joins us on this Veterans Day to talk about the importance of voting. Are you voting? And are you voting wisely? That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
The topic of sexual sin can be difficult to discuss in the church, but it's something that needs to be addressed. To help inform this conversation, FRC has a new publication for church leaders called Safeguard Your Ministry from Moral Failure. In it, Dr. Jesse Gill, a licensed psychologist, specifically addresses sexual sin and the susceptibility of those in church leadership. He discusses the contributing factors to moral failure, a practical understanding of our sexual nature, and a call for Christian leaders to increase their dependency on Christ. The principles found in this publication will instruct leaders in meeting their emotional, relational, and even sexual needs in healthy ways so that there will be less of a foothold for temptation. Safeguard Your Ministry for Moral Failure is a must-read for everyone involved in church ministry. To read the publication and learn more, visit frc.org/safeguard. That's frc.org/safeguard.
Are you a parent of a school-aged child? If so, then you understand that navigating your educational system is one of the biggest challenges facing families across the United States today. Family Research Council's new publication titled The SPLC's Teaching Tolerance, What Parents, Teachers, and Administrators Need to Know, helps parents identify and monitor a specific agenda that is being pushed on their children in public schools. The highly partisan left-wing Southern Poverty Law Center is one of the greatest offenders on this front with their program titled Teaching Tolerance. This program is designed to infiltrate schools with radically progressive education resources that undermine Christian values about marriage and family. FRC's brochure outlines the content within the SPLC's Teaching Tolerance Project and empowers parents to protect their children against the SPLC's agenda. Learn more at frc.org/teachingtolerance. That's frc.org/teachingtolerance.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. So glad to have you with us on this Veterans Day. And I think it is appropriate on this Veterans Day that we talk about elections, our freedom to vote, which is was a freedom that was fought for and a freedom that has been preserved by the men and women who have been willing to defend this country. The question is, are you using that freedom and are you using it wisely? Well, joining me now to give us a quick rundown on last week's election as well as the upcoming election in my home state of Louisiana is the Vice President of FRC Action, Brent Kylan. Brent, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony. Good to be with you.
All right, let's quickly give our listeners a rundown. I know they've seen a lot of the things, but sort of looking a little bit more behind the scenes on some of the trends. But we were involved in a number of the elections last week, FRC Action was. Give us a quick rundown.
Yeah, absolutely. So there were really four big states that everybody was watching last Tuesday. A lot of other states that had ballot measures and some local races. But the big ones were Kentucky, Virginia, Mississippi, and New Jersey. And the races, of course, were important in and of themselves. But everybody's really trying to look and see we're now less than a year out from the 2020 race, and where is the country? What are the trends saying? And so we had some interesting insights in that. We have Kentucky and Mississippi, which are deep red states. We have New Jersey, which is a deep blue state, and then Virginia, which is a purple state. So in Kentucky right now, as it stands, the governor's race has been decided by less than half of a point, 5,000 votes, with Matt Bevin trailing that. Now he's asked for a re-canvass of that, an extremely close race there. The Republicans did very well statewide outside of that race, though, in Kentucky. They actually picked up the attorney general's race for the first time in, I believe it was, 70 years. They netted that. That was a big pickup for them, actually the first African-American state attorney general, Republican state attorney general that the state has elected. In Mississippi, it's interesting. Again, a deep red state, but they picked up those big statewide races again, and they netted the attorney general race there as well. So the Republicans netted two of those, which is significant. If you look at Virginia, the Democrats did pick up both the state House and state Senate. I will say, though, I saw at least four of those races that were decided by 2 points or less. So again, I know we've talked a lot about how important some of these close races are, and that really underscores that again. And then the last thing that I would point out.
I want to stop you there for just a second because those close races where, you know, I recall back, you know, over the last couple of decades of my involvement in elections, and you would see those occasionally, that's become regular. I mean, as we
Absolutely.
Are
yeah.
more divided ideologically and politically in the country, more and more we're seeing elections narrowly decided by one or two votes here and there.
That is absolutely true, Tony. Again, and I know we've talked about this before, but in 2018 across the country, we saw 88 state legislative races decided by less than half of a point. 16 of those were decided by 10 votes or less. Two of them were decided by one vote. As we look ahead to 2020, let's take a look back at 2016, the last presidential election cycle. We had three states decided by, I believe it was, a combination of 78,000 votes, incredibly thin margins.
So every vote does matter, and it's important that we, you know, again, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I mean, as an American, you have a right to vote. I believe as a Christian, you have a responsibility to vote. And as we, you know, have talk about this on this Veterans Day, you know, our freedoms that we often take for granted here in the United States are something that many people around the world long for, the ability to vote and determine their own destiny and direction by the leaders that they pick.
That's absolutely right. One thing also along the lines of the election results last Tuesday, looking at New Jersey, this actually was a surprise for a lot of people. Tony, again, New Jersey is a deep blue state. The Republicans actually netted seats in the state legislature in both chambers. It was the first time Republicans have picked up more than one seat in the assembly since 1991.
Wow.
The first time that they've gained a seat in the state Senate since 2007. Real quick, interesting tie-in here. This was in the part of the state that is covered by U.S. Congressman Jeff Van Drew, who is one of two Republicans to vote – or excuse me, Democrats to vote against that impeachment proceeding. So maybe an early look at some of these first-term Democrat congressmen who have supported the impeachment and how that will play out next year.
Brent, very quickly before we run out of time, we still have one – election coming up in this off-year election, and that is in my home state of Louisiana. We do things a little differently. We don't have it. The timing is not the same as everybody else. We had our primary, and now our runoff is actually this Saturday.
That's right, Tony. Polling showing that very close. Everybody needs to get involved in that. If you're looking for information between now and Saturday for those voting decisions, you can go to our website, frcaction.org. We have a voter guide in partnership with iVoterGuide. We encourage everybody to look at those runoff races and the candidate positions.
Yeah, we still have a couple of statewide races to be decided, including the governor.
Mm-hmm.
That's to be decided, and so an important election. And, of course, a lot of people be reading things into the outcomes of these elections. I think it's a little hard to do, but nonetheless, they will be doing it. But the bottom line, Brent, as we talk about, every vote counts. We have a responsibility to go and vote. So, folks, equip yourself. Go to TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the vote, follow the link, rather, over to the Voter's Guide so you know exactly how to vote in the upcoming election. Brent, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, folks, don't go away. On the other side of the break, our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin joins us for a Veterans Day tribute. That's next. News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this special day, Veterans Day, as we mentioned at the top of the program. And I could not think of anyone better to join me in this conversation. We talk about the significance of Veterans Day. And not only that, but the state of affairs for our veterans and for those who serve in our nation's military and what that means overall to our country. Then the Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council and retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to be with you, especially on this special occasion.
Well, and folks, let me just, for those that are not frequent listeners to the Family Research Council's Washington Watch, General Boykin served 36 and a half years in the United States Army, one of the founding members of Delta, oversaw special operations for the Army for most of his career, served in the Pentagon with military intelligence, and for the last 8 years been at the Family Research Council.
Seven and a half, but who's counting?
That's right. We're all having fun. Well, today, day that we recognize veterans who have served our nation going back to the beginning. And you and I were talking about this. You know, we now have veterans, those that are retiring after 20 years of service in our military, but even, you know, veterans who maybe not served 20 years, but veterans that their entire experience in the military was in a wartime military.
No, that's exactly right, Tony. I mean, if you stop and think about it, the last 18 years we've been at war. So this military today is all volunteer, but they volunteered knowing that the chances were that they were going off to war. And I think that says a lot about the character of the young men and women that are coming into our military today, because they know that this is a military at war.
Actually, it encourages me to see young men and women who volunteer, as you say, knowing that they may go into conflict, go into combat, and they're still volunteering. In fact, most branches are not having difficulty in recruiting and filling the ranks, especially now under the new administration, after they've gotten rid of all of the social engineering that was taking place under the last administration, which did affect recruitment.
Yes.
But it says a lot about, I think, America and the DNA that in Western civilization, what Jesus said in John about greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his friends, that still deep within what it means to be an American is to give of yourself to the benefit of others.
Yeah, Tony, it's, last week, you know, there was another Medal of Honor ceremony for one of the Green Berets.
I watched that.
Yeah.
As the president made that presentation.
Well, if you look at almost every Medal of Honor that has been earned, it was because that individual was trying to save somebody else. That individual had put their own life in jeopardy to help a buddy, to come to the aid of a comrade, to do something, as in the case of that guy. And I think that really is something that we need to reflect on Veterans Day, is the number of people that not have gotten the Medal of Honor, but the number of people that have been in combat and that have maybe been wounded, but at least put their lives in danger because their obligation to the guy on their right and left is a powerful motivator to get them to do extraordinary things under very difficult circumstances. And that's why I'm so proud to be a veteran, and I know you are too, for that very reason.
Let's talk a little bit about the military, conditions in the military. And you and I were very concerned under the previous administration and how the social experimentation pushed by the Obama administration, using our men and women in uniform as lab rats for their social experimentation, driving many from the military, hindering the training and effectiveness of our military, and endangering lives. We've seen a course correction in that.
Boy, have we ever. You know, Tony, I don't think you can even calculate the amount of damage that was done in the 8 years of President Obama. Because of those social experiments, and the focus was not on winning the wars, it was really on these social experiments and changing our military into something that was anything other than a war-fighting organization. And now you have a president as the commander-in-chief that has helped to restore readiness. Now, you know, that's what every mom and dad in America should want, is for their son and daughter that's serving in the military to have a president that cares enough about them to fight for them to have the resources that they need. The second thing is a president or a commander-in-chief that understands that the sole mission of the military is to fight and win the nation's wars. That has not changed since we created our military. And what you saw under the Obama administration is you never heard them talk about winning. But when this president came on board, he said, tell me what it takes to win, because we're going to win. You know, that's his big thing, is winning, winning in business.
Right.
But he also understands winning in warfare. And he has given them not only the equipment and the material that they need, but he's given them the rules of engagement. So we've got the veterans experience of the young men and women in the military today. If they get 4 years, especially if they get 8 years of President Trump, is going to be substantially different than those that spent a substantial portion of the 8 years with the Obama administration.
Well, it was like when I – and you were in during the same time, but I came in right as President Ronald Reagan on the heels of Jimmy Carter. And big sea change. I remember, you know, it didn't matter much to me. I was a private. But the pay raise that Ronald Reagan pushed through for the military, equipment, you know, we were still using old stuff from early years of Vietnam. I remember eating sea rations that were from the Vietnam era. And that's changed. And one thing I've noticed, and I didn't think about that until you just mentioned this, but parents used to come up to me, you know, in the previous administration, saying, should my son or daughter go into the military? I'm just concerned about the environment. I'm concerned about just, you know, what they'll be exposed to. And it wasn't combat that they were concerned about.
That's right.
It was the moral depravity that was being pushed through the policies of the Obama administration. I'm not hearing that anymore.
No, I'm not either, Tony. And I'm like you, all over this country, I had moms and dads saying, well, you know, my son wants to join the military, my daughter wants to go in the Navy, but I just don't want them to have to check their faith at the door. And I it looks to me like there's an all-out assault on their on religious liberty in the military, you know, and I get that all the time. And, of course, I would say to them, I mean, it became very difficult, but I would say to them, just think of what kind of military we'd have if all the Christians stopped coming into the military. We need Christians in the military. But you said it earlier, the readiness was affected, but more importantly, the recruiting was affected because of that attitude by people all over the country, and you can't blame them. And I must tell you, you know, I have grandchildren now that at least two of which are military age. And if Mr. Obama was still there, I would even be in a situation where I would think, maybe not. Let's wait until we get another commander-in-chief and see if it's better. But I understand that attitude. But the impact was the readiness and the recruiting. And the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and I think the Marines actually might have done okay. We're hurting for recruits because of that.
Yeah. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us on this Veterans Day. General Jerry Boykin, my guest, Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council. General, let's talk a little bit about that change, that course correction. Yes, the funding is being restored to our military. Mm-hmm. They're getting the equipment that they need. Respect that they need from this administration, but also, you know, you continue to spearhead an effort, a coalition to ensure that religious freedom in our nation's military is protected. Still a little bit of a mop-up effort. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still, you know, it's going to take some time for those that were in the pipeline who bought in and were promoted, you know, as a result of buying into the Obama administration. Yeah. It's going to take a while for some of those to be pushed on out and be replaced with other military leaders.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And it got really bad. And you directed us at the Family Research Council to stand up a coalition to support, you know, young men and women that serve in their military when their religious liberty is infringed. And we did that in July of 2013. And we now have, I don't remember how many, I think it's about 55 different organizations that are involved in this coalition. But that's our mission. It's to fight. When we see an infringement on religious liberty, whether it's a chaplain or a private, you know, in the 82nd Airborne or wherever it is, we go after that. And but the good news is we got a president now that backs us. And it's become much easier to win these things than it was under the previous administration. But what you just said is very important, is because people talk about a deep state. Well, you know, you can almost say that there's a deep state within the ranks of the uniformed military, in that you got a lot of senior leaders that were promoted under the Obama administration. And they were there, in some cases at least, because they were willing to support his agenda. And part of that agenda very clearly was reducing the impact of Christianity in our military.
Well, again, this is an example of where elections have consequences. You hire a commander-in-chief that is focusing the military on its mission to win, to fight and to win wars, and not be a laboratory for the left social experimentation. It makes a huge difference. It makes a difference for the security and the well-being of America and even really the world. I want to, in the few moments we have left, General Boykin, I want to, you know, as we look at Veterans Day and we have young men and women who are considering military service, none of us know what tomorrow holds, but the world is becoming increasingly a dangerous place. Mm-hmm. And, of course, for believers, we're not surprised by that, because Jesus warned in the Gospels. He said, look, you know, the end is not yet. You're going to hear about rumors of wars, and there's going to be conflict. There's going to be, you know, natural disasters, all of these things. The world's going to be, you know, a very dangerous and topsy-turvy place, and we're seeing that. And, you know, increasingly, America has looked to be a defender. And America has a record of doing that. Now, this president is using the military very judiciously, as we saw. You know, we didn't necessarily agree with him in northeast Syria by pulling those troops out. I do think that you can be very confident this president is not going to use the military unless he absolutely has to. That said, though, I mean, the world's a dangerous place, and somebody has got to lead. And America is, I think, is as long as God's hand continues to be on us and we have men and women of abiding faith and conviction, America will provide some element of that leadership.
No question about it. And I mean, America is the superpower in the world today. And along with that comes a lot of responsibility. You know, one of the things that our president did, which I applauded, was he stood before the leaders of NATO and he said, pay up, pay your bill. You cannot depend on America defending you anymore if you're not going to pay your bills. Well, that meant a higher level of readiness for all of NATO, which certainly eases some of the burden on America. And that impacts our troops. That impacts the young men and women serving in this military today. And I think that the president really cares about those young men and women that serve. I mean, I think he really does care about them.
When you look out around the globe, where do you think the greatest threats for the future are?
I think China is the biggest threat, but it's not necessarily on the battlefield of of Central Asia or anything. I think that China is the number one threat because of their myriad capabilities, to include, you know, space and cyber and all of that, economics. But I also think that global terrorism is probably the one that's going to take the most lives if we're not vigilant and very committed to stopping this. So Russia is always going to be a threat. And I frankly think that we, at this point, we've got a different situation than we had a year and a half ago with Kim in North Korea, which I actually said openly and publicly before the first meeting between Trump and Kim. I said, for the first time in my life, I'm really concerned about a nuclear exchange. And the reason I said that was because the margin for a miscalculation was very small, and it could have resulted in a nuclear exchange. I think at this point we're much further away from that than we were a year and a half ago. There's still a long ways to go, and we'll see what happens. But I think that there are going to be some other bad actors that are going to crop up from time to time and have to be swatted back down, too.
All right. I think that the issue of terrorism, I mean, I'm not sure that that's – I don't know that that'll ever go away.
No, it won't.
It's more of a containment. Mm-hmm. And I think this president is doing a pretty good job on that front. Well, General, I want to thank you for joining us today. Thank you again for your service to the country. Thank you for your service here at FRC, and grateful to have you a part of the FRC team.
Well, Tony, thanks for your service, too, even though it was in the Marine Corps.
Well, not everybody could be in the Marine Corps. I'm sorry you had to serve in the Army. Well, folks, to all of our veterans, from the General and I, we thank you for your service to our country. And I'm going to tell you, it was one of the best experiences I had. I didn't have I didn't spend a lifetime in the military as the General did. I served for 3 years, enjoyed my time, but I think I got more out of the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps got out of me. And I would encourage every young man and woman to consider serving the country in that fashion. I'm grateful for the country we live in and the opportunity to serve it. Well, folks, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.